I probably get 400, 500 calls a year from people saying I've had this experience. But, and when it's pertaining to Asbury Park, 30% are people who have stayed at the Berkeley. Mm-hmm.
And then I said to myself, it didn't have a face. Like in a minute, because I was like, wait, I just didn't see it. It was dark. I'm like, no, man. But somehow it didn't register.
Right.
It didn't have a face.
They had been having these strange occurrences happening every single night, and they didn't like to be afraid. The husband was having problems where he was waking up at night and he felt like someone was grabbing his legs and pulling on them.
Do we, like, what ultimately is a ghost? Do we all end up like a ghost? What's up, everybody? Dear Abby, this is going to be a fun show. I got new people to introduce you guys to also. Natalie's here.
Hello, everybody.
And our friend Kathy is here.
Hey, everybody.
Now, a couple of things. Nat works here at the Berkeley.
Yes, I do.
She's been working very close with us. You've really taken off like a rocket here.
I've tried my best.
Everyone's new favorite person.
Oh, wow.
Just so much to talk about.
I love to say.
It's going to be a different kind of show to introduce you guys to Nat, which is why Kathy is here. So, one of my favorite people in Asbury Park.
Oh, thank you very much.
So, why don't, before we get into this, and everyone, well, just to kind of tee it up, we've had the haunting here. One of the best episodes we ever did on Dear Abby was we did a ghost hunt at my mother's house, and it creeped the living shit out of me.
Sounds terrible. It was wild.
I've only been kind of like ghost hunt adjacent to one other ghost hunt in my entire life, which is why Kath is here.
Okay.
But why don't we start with just giving the folks at home, in the car or whatever, a little bit of background about yourself, what you do here in Asbury, because some people may have heard of you, obviously.
Well, I'm very famous.
I'm very Asbury Park famous.
So my name is Kathy Kelly, and I am the owner and proprietor of Paranormal Books and Curiosities and the Paranormal Museum in Asbury Park's historic downtown district. We are, I think, if not the oldest retailer in the downtown, one of the oldest retailers. We've been there for going on 15 years. We're going into our 15th year. But I am 100% dedicated to the paranormal. That's what I do. I'm not a hobbyist. It's what I do for a living. I travel the world going to haunted places, collecting haunted artifacts. And, you know, one of the reasons why I came to Asbury Park in the first place and why I chose Asbury Park as a place for my business was the Berkeley.
Now, first of all, that's fascinating. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. But how do you get into that as a business, and just like what made you want to get into that in the first place?
You know, people always ask me, like, I used to say that I didn't have like this aha. I used to say I didn't have a holy shit moment, right? Where it was like, oh my God, something happened to me. And then I was, you know, completely focused on it. As a kid, I was just that weird kid. You know, I loved Halloween. I loved Edgar Allan Poe. I loved all the dark and stormy kinds of things. But as I got older, I started to remember something that happened to me when I was like 3 years old. And I think that kind of just jump-started this passion for understanding what happens after you die, right? I also just think it's really cool. You know, like there's something just really cool about it. It's all about history. It's all about people. It's all about, you know, the connection between the past and now. But as far as how you do it professionally, I think there's like 8 people on the planet that do it professionally that don't have a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of them, right? And what happened with me was I had a former career. I loved it, but I kind of hit the max of what I could do with it. And when I decided, I actually just quit. I didn't have a plan. And I was, you know, in my mid-30s, and a friend of mine said, you know, do you want to be in your mid-40s making this decision? And I was like, no, I'm going to do it now.
Now, did you prep people? Or were you like, hey, listen, I want to get into...
No, I didn't know that that's what I was going to do. I just knew that that's what I was ending up doing, right? So I had decided I was going to take this year off. And the year of George, I was just going to, you know, go out and have the year of Kathy. And everything I did pertained to that. And a friend of mine who has known me since I was 10 years old said, you know, you got to get a job. You know, you got to do something. And I was like, I know, but I don't know what I want to do. And I'm not afraid of starting new things. I was always very entrepreneurial, and I come from an entrepreneurial family. You know, my parents are immigrants, and so... You know, I wasn't afraid of starting something completely new or jumping in a completely different direction. And my friend said, I don't know, you got to do something. And it has to do with the paranormal. And I said, well, what do you mean? And she's like, I don't know, but it's the only thing that you have consistently been interested in, mm-hmm. in, you know, your life. And I thought, holy shit, that's true. And my background was actually television. So I had done live sports production and contract negotiations and distribution and things like that for international sports. So what I did was I looked at ratings on television, and the only original content that was being produced more than Major League Baseball was paranormal television shows. And this was a long time ago.
Yeah, I was going to say this had to be before Housewives.
Yeah, this was a long time ago.
They took that
ago.
A little, right, they well, took that
well,
a little
well,
far.
Well, it was also before, it was also when you had basic cable,
well,
right?
Medium so, shows were really big around
it was
that, time
that
well.
It was Fear on MTV. It was, you know, there's a lot of stuff that was happening, and the ghost shows were just starting, right? So the TV shows were just starting. And I looked at that and I thought, shit, if they're producing that much content and people are consuming it, then there are people out there who are as interested in this stuff as I am, and I'm going to create a place for them to go, right? And so I originally called it House of Spirits, which thank God I changed the name because Johnny Max opened up.
Yeah, right. It was right. Like bar.
I changed the name to Paranormal just at the last minute. I changed it to Paranormal Books and Curiosities. We opened in 2008. We started doing a little bit of everything, like ghost tours, and I had books on every subject, and I sold ghost hunting equipment, and, you know, we did a little bit of everything. And it just grew from there, and it grew because people came in and told me what they wanted, mm-hmm. and I listened to them. You know what I mean? And yeah. I think that's something that's really, really important, is when people come in and say, hey, we want to do this, you figure out a way yeah. for them to do that.
So, you know, it's funny because we got really just connected when we first got here to Asbury. And, you know, on the show, I don't, like, for as much as we talk about the Berkeley, I don't make it about really, like, work and stuff a lot, you
right.
know? But when we first got here, we were very new kids on the block, and we talked, mm-hmm. like, you were literally one of the first conversations
right.
we had, right? And it was just super, super real, just kind of like, you know, I'm a big fan of the just the no bullshit kind of conversations,
right?
So we clicked pretty much
right
away.
Yeah, that's who I am, right?
So, you know, as that's going on, we pulled really The Haunting out of the sky last year. Mm-hmm. We talked about that a little bit. And we had an overnight room that almost got put out there the very first thing last year. It's kind of almost like no one's going to actually buy this.
Yeah, of course.
But, like, you know, we'll just have it on the site because it's kind of fun and whatever, and then yeah. we'll decorate the rooms. And it was the first thing that went. And I was like, holy shit, okay, well, now we've got to come up with something.
Now what?
So I call Kathy, and I'm like, all right, listen. We've got these people that are staying, okay? I've heard a ton of stories about this place. I did a ton of research. And a lot of the research was linked to you, which is a big reason right. why I want to have you here today. So I'm like, all right, these guys check in. They go upstairs. The room's not decorated at all, not an inch. We didn't for a building that is right now covered in spider webs, okay?
Oh my God, so many.
Like covered, all right? Like we didn't put a thing up there. And they come back downstairs, and I said I asked to meet them when they checked in. So I bring them back up, and I say, listen, there's a reason. And I put him in one of the rooms. I won't say which one, mm-hmm. but it was next to a room that I had read a bunch about.
Right.
And I said, look, here's the story. And I bring Kathy inside. She's got her tools and stuff.
Right, right.
Okay. Yeah. She sits down. They go for like an hour doing this ghost hunt thing. And when they leave, I said to them, are you still upset that it's not decorated? Just like that. These people, like, I'm telling you, goosebumps, white. And I said, the ultimate test for these rooms is, are you going to stay in it?
Right.
The guy moved his room.
Wow.
Like legit. The
I'm
next time we did it,
right.
next time we did it, the dude checked out.
Yeah,
of course.
Okay, yeah. And then the other people just got wasted and just like had a good time.
Well, yeah.
But it was some wild
right.
stuff. But so now in doing The Haunting, what's funny about it is we're, you know, like it's something that obviously, like, you know, we host here and everything,
right.
and production guys come in, and Abracadabra has been awesome, and like it's a haunted house, you know.
Yeah.
And in Asbury, like, I've learned you've really got to be very open-minded to catering to a lot of people while simultaneously having an identity that's your own.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you have people from all walks of life that come into it, but almost all of them say the same thing either before or after. And I'll be at the front of that line helping people check in if it gets really busy and whatever. And they'll start saying, okay, well, is this place really haunted? Is this place really haunted? And the people that probably have some of the best perspective are when you first get here. But especially when me, Chris, and Urbano first got here, we were literally alone with the exception of, because it was COVID. So we got here in March of last year. So we had 3 months where it was just me, Chris, Urbano, and Steve in the building. And that was it.
Just like free reign of the whole
hotel.
Well,
they couldn't have.
There were no guests.
You couldn't have guests.
Yeah.
So we're basically just walking around cleaning the place up. And I would say it all the time. It was like, the first time I walked into the second floor kitchen, I was like, it's The Shining.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? No, that's what I always say to people. It's a very Stephen King hotel.
And I've been to all the hotels that he wrote that in. Mm-hmm. There is that vibe here.
Yeah.
There definitely is that, you know, old world, something's walking these halls vibe to this place. And I got to tell you, it doesn't matter what paint you put on the walls. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what, you know, carpet you put on the floor. You just feel it, you know? And, it's funny because when I got here in 2007, 2008, I would say it was probably as empty as it was in March of 2020. There was a real resistance to anyone telling stories about anything happening here. You know, I mean, other people that I talked to, you know, I did a lot of research. I'm a historian by training and, you know, like I take the history very seriously. I actually went back and got my master's in history just to kind of give myself cred to do it. Other places you go and they're like, yeah, you know, we heard these stories too, or yeah, people say that the kids experience it or I believe it. Like if you go over to the boardwalk, they 100% believe it. But the only one that ever threatened to sue me they threatened to sue me. And I said, because I wrote a book, you know, about it. And I said, listen, I want to be a good neighbor. I'm not trying to screw, you know, I'm not trying to create a problem here. But it was, you know, I think that's indicative, though, of people who don't embrace what they have.
Yeah.
Right? Because what I always say about hauntings is the people who are interested are going to know about them. The people who aren't. Until you have an experience, right? Mm-hmm. And I will say that I probably get, I don't know, 400, 500 calls a year from people saying I've had this experience. And when it's pertaining to Asbury Park, 30% are people who have stayed at the Berkeley and had an experience. And you and I have talked. We know the area that we're talking about.
Yeah.
But there are multiple places in this town. I mean, in this building that have activity. You know, and you feel it.
It's funny for me because, like, I obviously feel a very close connection to this place, right? And when I get asked that question, and I get asked it a lot, okay, I say, I mean, I don't know, and who cares? If so, one thing that I'll tell you what, I haven't really answered this. I never said it on the podcast. I will answer the question straight up on this show, just to kind of give a little drum roll of, has anything happened to me in this building? I will answer that at the end.
Right.
But I never looked at this, like, I love history, right? We did the Historical Society Museum in the building for that reason. Like, I'm a huge, huge, huge believer, and we got this from our dad, of really understanding the place that you're in, the community that you're in, immersing yourself in it, and having a lot of respect for it.
Right.
And to me, if that's part of it, that's just a lot of fun, and it's really cool in its own way.
Yeah.
I really believe that.
Yeah.
And this town in general, I think, has such a crazy long history.
Yeah.
And so many different spots, you know, around here that I'm like, wow, that's got kind of like a spooky vibe to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely.
At the same time, like, there's a hipness and a coolness to it, and like, as a person that's been a part of putting a lot of new carpet down, a lot of new paint and all that other stuff, it's fun for me in a lot of ways, but there's also like certain spots that I would never touch in a million years.
Right, out of respect, right?
That I find like classically perfect and beautiful, but other people might look at that and say that's creepy. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah, yeah.
But you know, it's a lot of fun in a lot of different ways. But I think one thing to remember, too, is, look, the building's 100 years old with a lot of history.
Right.
And so many things that, you know, this, like, the even the history of the place being built is, like, crazy, crazy, crazy fascinating.
Right.
But like, this is kind of new for me though. So when you get a phone call, right, and it's not necessarily even about this place, what are they calling you for? Are they trying to make you fix something?
Or like help?
You mean about this place?
Well, no, just in general.
So usually there's two reasons that they're calling. And it's always afterwards. They're not calling me in anticipation. It's not like, hey, I'm thinking of checking into the Berkeley, but I want to make sure it's, you know, not haunted or it is haunted.
Yeah.
It's usually something has happened, scared the shit out of me, or it's making me uncomfortable in some way. So they're either, they're looking for two things. One, they're looking to be told that they're not crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And two, they're looking to be told that it's okay. You know, like it's
they're
okay.
Safe.
There are things they can do to mitigate. If it's something that's going on, you know, that's happening over and over, okay, are there things I can do to make it better?
Right.
And sometimes there aren't. You just have to change your perspective, you know.
Well, is it ever like, oh, wow, that's just a pipe. Like, that's just a leaky pipe.
I'll tell you, I had an investigation very early in my, in kind of my full-time career of doing this, where I had an elderly couple call us out. It was actually, I think it was their grandson, and he was a student over at Monmouth University, and he's like, listen, my grandfather is having a lot of trouble. I think there's something going on in his house, and, you know, he's a war hero, and he's not, he doesn't believe in any of this stuff, but he's afraid. When you hear that someone's afraid, you know, you have to be a special kind of a jerk not to want to go and help them, right? So I said, oh, no problem, let's go check it out. So the first thing that I always do is... I always do a kind of intensive investigation interview. I want to know who you are. I want to understand, you know, am I just trying to convince you of something, or is something really happening? Are you,
yeah,
you know,
what's the goal?
Are you planning on watching me run around in the dark while you and your friends have a couple of glasses of wine? Because I'm not into that, you know. And when I talked to this guy, and he you know, I mean, he was like, you know, he was a former Marine, and you're never a former Marine, excuse me.
Right.
He was a Marine. And his wife, he was about 84, 85 years old. His wife was about 15 years younger than him, but she had also been, I think she was in the Air Force. So she was also military and like in shape and in charge, and, you know, their house, everything was perfectly put together. But they had been having these strange occurrences happening every single night. And honestly, it was scaring the shit out of them. And they didn't like to be afraid. So I talked to them. And when I was talking to them, I was like, you know, these people are legit. Something's happening to them. Something is really happening to them. So we made arrangements to come back another night. We brought in all of our equipment. I brought in three or four different investigators. One of the things that they were claiming was that as they were falling asleep, right around the same time every night, they would hear someone walking around in the kitchen, and their bedroom was right off of the kitchen. And, you know, the husband was more elderly, and I think he slept medicated, but the wife would get up, and she had this samurai sword.
Nice.
And she would run out with it. And she was badass,
not
you know,
too much to
you
scare
know, but
it,
she
though.
Was just like, but when she would run out there, there wouldn't be anybody there. And so she started to realize, well, this is something I don't know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the husband was having problems where he was waking up at night and he felt like someone was grabbing his legs and pulling on them. So we go in, and I realize most of the stuff is environmental. So I put people around the house. We have our cameras set up and everything. So I go in and I lay down in their bed, and they're staying someplace else for the night. And one of my investigators is laying next to me, and, you know, we're wide awake, but we're being quiet. And we get to that time of the night, and I'm like, holy shit, is somebody walking around outside? I could hear it too.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounded like someone was walking back and forth in the kitchen. And it was coming up, sounded like it was coming up to the door and then fading away. And honestly, I was like, he's not kidding. There's really something there. So I get up, I you know, I have somebody out in the kitchen, and I'm like, is there anybody out there? Anybody walking around? No, nobody's walking around. So ultimately, after about 45 minutes, we realized what it was. And, it, you know, spoiler alert, it was not a ghost.
Aww.
It was the refrigerator. And when it would click on at night, it was rocking gently back and forth.
That had to jack them up so bad.
And it sounded exactly like someone walking. But you had to be, everything had to be completely quiet, right?
Could you imagine being that terrified and it's your refrigerator?
Right, right. But, you know, in a way, because I was able to show him that I took him seriously. I took his claim seriously. I did the investigation. When I told him it was the refrigerator, I was then able to say to him, and I think you have neuropathy in your legs. I think you need to see a medical doctor. Mm. And I think that that, because he was counting, he was having these two divergent experiences, and but putting them together and thinking that there was some causality between them. And so, you know, yeah, I mean, sometimes you go in, I won't say a lot of times you go in and it's not a spirit, you know. But then, you know, in the, I don't know, 1,500 investigations I've done, I can think of, off the top of my head, five or six that I went in thinking it's going to be the refrigerator and coming out being like, it wasn't the refrigerator. Yeah. And being utterly convinced that those people were dealing with something that, that, you know, they couldn't just unplug, you know. Yeah. And
so where do you land with that? Like what's the most intense experience you've had, period?
So I first off, I'm going to tell you, there are a lot of people who will tell you, you know, you can hire, you know, you can bring in a witch or you can bring in a person. You can different people of different faiths and different, you know, belief systems to come in and cleanse your house and do different things like that. And I agree, you can. Mm-hmm. You know, people can come in and do different things. I'm of a mind that it's a lot easier to learn to live with something than it is to get rid of it. Okay, because it's like people. If they they're people, right? So if they decide to stay, they're going to stay. But the most intense one that I had was actually a family that was, it was a young family. It was a couple. They had two children. They'd bought this house not that far from here. She had come to me in July, and I was really busy. It was the summer, and I always have a rule, right? You're not haunted in October. If you call me in October, you're not haunted in October, right? So it's like, if you call me in July,
that gag's too easy.
Yeah, I'm way too busy, and I'm not going to do it. She called me in July. She called me in August. She called me in September. Finally, she called me again in December. And she and I have this rule where I say to people, okay, great. If this is going on, the first step we're going to do is you're going to keep a journal. Because if you can't be bothered to keep a journal, I can't be bothered to come out and check the place. Yeah, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to do one of these investigations. So she said to me, I actually have been. And she emailed it to me. And I was like, oh, okay, holy shit. There's some, you know, like there's something. She's afraid enough about this or concerned enough about this. She's been paying real attention to it. Plus, she'd contacted me for 4 months. She sent it to me. I looked at it and I was like, okay, we're going to go check this out. So we went out to her house. I think they were concerned because their kids had started to report seeing a person walking into their room. That's fairly common when stuff like this happens. I went in. There's lots of different equipment that you can bring. Usually, I don't really rely that much on equipment, but people want to see it. Mm-hmm. You know, people want to see the cameras. They want to see the bells and the whistles. I just kind of go in and see what I see, feel what I feel. And my team will have the equipment. And we had a camera called an SLS camera, which is one of those cameras. You know, it's like how the Kinect works on Xbox. It's how your avatar gets on the screen. So the little camera sends out, lights, and it reads data that comes back. And, you know, sometimes you point it at something and there's not a person that you can see, but the camera sees a person and it comes back. So we were there. We were sitting down. They had left. They had sent the kids to the grandparents, and I had asked that they leave. Smart. Because the husband was really into it, you know, really, really into it. So I said, you can come back early, but you have to leave in the beginning. And almost everyone on my team saw the same thing, which it looked like we were sitting in one room and we saw what looked like a man run from one room to where the garage is. Nope. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there and I was just like, hey guys, just checking your temperature. Anybody else see a guy run from the living room to the garage? Every one of them was like, yeah, that's exactly what I saw. We all went to the same place. We go out to the garage. So we bring the SLS out. And I don't do research on a property before I go in because I want to get the data. I don't want it to inform what I experienced there. Mm-hmm. So we have the SLS. We go out to the garage and we see what looks like on the camera, a body kind of suspended from the ceiling. Oof. So, you know, we start talking to it to see if it'll respond to us or, you know, can you get down? And it looks like it gets down and it's walking around. It's kind of creepy, right? Yeah.
A little, yeah.
So we go upstairs to where the kids are seeing things. We bring an EMF detector and we're measuring electromagnetic field. And what we realize is that none of the outlets in the house have any kind of insulation on them. Mm. So there's a lot of this electricity kind of going out, and it can cause you to feel paranoia. It can mm-hmm. cause you to feel claustrophobic. So I'm like, okay, that's something we can take care of right away. You just call an electrician. That'll mm-hmm. take care of it. But while we're up there, we have a person on our team who we have a EVP recorder and a person on our team who claims to have some psychic ability. And so we're doing EVP recordings. We're trying to get voices, and we get three names on the recorder. And now we're going to wrap it up for the night, right? We're going to take what we have, and we're going to go back. The names that came through were Paulie, Nikki, and Danny, okay? So just like that, though, right? I actually thought the first name was Polly, but it was Paulie. So we don't tell them what we've seen. We're going to come back in a couple of days and talk to them about it. So I start doing research. And when I do research, it's like, you know, some people in police departments, they check things for mm-hmm. you. You do some stuff online. But, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of it is pulling in favors and mm-hmm. trying to get people to do stuff for you. So it turns out at that particular home's address had been changed. The number had been changed because there had been a suicide there 6 years prior. A man named Paul killed himself. He hung himself in the garage. I'm actually getting chills thinking about it right now.
I'm feeling a little uncomfortable.
He hung himself in the garage in a fit of depression, right? Oh. He had two daughters, Daniela and Nicole, mm-hmm. Nikki and Danny. And when we went back to tell them this, I'm used to going back and being like, nope, it was the pipes. Yeah, you right. know, like yeah. you said. Yeah. I went back and I had to say, I do think that there's something here. And essentially all we were able to do is then kind of just talk to the house and say, if you have a message for your daughter, we know you made this decision, you know, you made a permanent, you made a mistake, mm-hmm. but you don't have to stay here. And we saged the house and we ended up going back a couple of times. We definitely told them to get the insulation put in, the light switches and everything like that. And about 4 months later, she contacted me and she was just like, listen, it's been awesome. The house has been great. We do from time to time see things or experience things. But essentially what we did was we said, you know, Paul, you don't have to go if you don't want to, but you're scaring these people. Mm-hmm. So just
chill.
Just be quiet.
Relax,
you know?
So like what then, like, I'm trying to ask the question the right way. Do we, like, what ultimately is a ghost? Do we all end up like a ghost?
All right, fam, community, we love you so much. We're still in Italy. Very, very, very special sponsor and very special reader today.
Hey guys, official Mrs. Manzo here, and I'm ready to talk about OneSkin with you guys. If you're always on the hunt for the latest and most advanced skincare technology to keep your skin healthy and looking its best, then you'll want to keep listening. Support for today's episode comes from OneSkin, founded by a team of four female longevity scientists with over 15 years of experience studying the biology of aging. After testing over 900 peptides, they discovered OS1. OS1 peptide is significantly proven to target aging, also called C-Synstel, the main source of skin aging, and actually reduces the biological age of skin by several years and can even slow down aging in younger skin. Their flagship product, OS1 Face, is clinically validated to improve firmness, fine lines, and overall tone and appearance. And you know we all love that. In a space that's so saturated with overhyped topical skincare products, OneSkin stands out by targeting the root cause of skin aging, not just the surface level signs, to promote healthier skin from the inside out. OneSkin can be used on its own or combined with your current favorite routine products. It's vegan, cruelty-free, fragrance-free, and it's got the Skin Safe seal of approval, meaning it's suitable for even the most sensitive skin. I have super sensitive skin, so I'm very reluctant to use certain products. And this product, I felt, honestly, did not give me any sort of rash or anything like that. And I find that before your wedding, that's super important. For a limited time, our listeners can get 15% off on OneSkin with our code DearAlby at OneSkin.co. That's Dear Albie at oneskin.co. My favorite part about the OneSkin, their products, they don't create a temporary reduction in aging. You know, treating the symptoms rather than the root cause of aging has long been the norm. Most skincare available on the market is designed to provide temporary reduction in visible signs of aging, addressing the surface symptoms of an underlying decline in skin health. OneSkin's mission is the best. They believe in purpose of skincare is not just to improve how we look, but to optimize our skin biology so that it is more resilient to the aging process. And that's why their skincare is seriously next level. You all know I just got married and I needed my skin to be in tip-top shape for these photos. So I started using these products about a month and a half before. And honestly, I definitely saw a difference and I'm excited to see where it's going to take me moving forward with my skin because, you know, this I'm almost 30 this year. I got to be looking fresh. OneSkin's the world's first skin longevity company. OneSkin addresses skin health at the molecular level, targeting the root cause of aging so skin behaves, feels, and appears younger. It's time to get started with your new face, eye, and body routine at the discounted rate. Get 15% off with code DEARALBIE at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with Dear Albie. We only have one body, one skin, and only one you can choose to make better. Age healthy with OneSkin.
Wow, Mrs. Manzo, first one in. Ciao, arrivederci. Hey, really quick, Italy's been amazing. Episode's coming for you guys. Community, I love you to death. Wish you guys were here. Love you all to death. So much to tell you. Hey, it was a good day, guys.
I don't think so, right? I told you that story, but I'm still not convinced, right? So I still go into the next case. Like, I still don't know. I'm presenting a story to you that, to me, is compelling because there's evidence.
Yeah.
It's evidentiary. But I don't know. You know what I mean? And it would be wrong of me to make anyone think that I do. But I don't think we all end up wandering around earthbound, kind of, you know, going through psych. I think there's a lot more freedom after, you know, afterwards. And I'm not sure that there's a whole lot of memory. You know, I'm not sure there's a whole lot of like, I'm going to stay and I really like the mats or I really like, you know, like that. But someone like Paulie, who I think made a terrible choice because he was in a terrible place. I think he was so focused on what he was doing that he stayed in that moment.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he's living. It's like, I don't think he's reliving his life. I think he's reliving that.
Yeah.
45
minutes. So like, how do you think? Yeah, that's kind of, I think it's probably a better way of asking the question. Like, how do you, like, what is your interpretation of, because obviously, I mean, you believe ghosts and paranormal things exist,
you know,
right?
I definitely think there's something. Yeah.
So like, what do you, your interpretation of that ultimately is what? It's a consciousness that's like.
But I think that's still open for debate. I think it's not one thing. I think it's there's a bit of the Wild West to it. I think that there's definitely been times where I do believe the consciousness survives. I mean, and that's what everyone is talking about, right? When you're talking about the survival of personality after death. It's like when people say to you, "I believe, you know, we all go, energy can't be created or, you know, destroyed. We all go back to the great, you know, power source." And it's like, okay, but I don't want to be a power source. I want to be Kathy.
Yeah.
You know, and I have had experiences that lead me to believe that that's certainly possible, that there's at least certain people that does happen to. And I'll tell you, you know, when you're dealing with like psychic phenomena versus hauntings or like a paranormal investigation or something like that, I don't even like saying paranormal investigation, but, you know, it's more like a safari. But, you know, when you talk to certain mediums and things like that, I got to tell you, there's data that comes out. There's information that comes out. It's really compelling. And then there are other people who will say, you know, no, we reincarnate. And I don't, you know, I'm not sure.
Right.
But I don't think it's linear. I think there are options. And I don't think it's rigid either. Like, you know, you're born into this on this planet and you pretty much have to follow a certain, based on where you're born, you kind of have to follow a certain structure pattern. I'm not sure that that's the case.
Right.
On the other side.
So now with that, like, so do you cover a lot? Like, for instance, I've had a lot of people write into the show asking me to do shows on psychics and mediums and like, for whatever reason lately, and this kind of came up a little bit after I think we were talking about sending mom to Salem, like witchcraft in general.
It's because of TikTok.
So like,
I'm gonna tell you, that's why the interest is so escalated at this moment.
What the hell is going on TikTok?
Because on
we're casting
TikTok,
spells on TikTok?
Yes.
What do you mean?
There's a whole other side of TikTok that's like called witch talk. And it's people that are coming on. And a lot of them are full of shit. I'm not going to lie. And they're making things up and trying to educate people with their quote unquote spells that are shit. But there's this whole witch talk where people are giving tips and tricks and, you know, use this from your garden or use this from your spice cabinet to like make somebody obsessed with you.
Witchcraft has been growing as an interest for the last 4 or 5 years, and so has tarot. Right,
tarot. Tarot's really, so really many big. Fake bullshit tarot readers on TikTok.
So first of all, it's cool, right? It seems cool. From the perspective of interest in witchcraft, though, it's also like this idea that you're tapped into, or you're somehow connected to both the physical world and the spiritual world. Mm-hmm. And witchcraft kind of encompasses that, right? Mm-hmm. Most people would consider themselves to be either a hedge witch or like a green witch, a kitchen witch, or something along those lines. And there's something, I think it's because people feel a lack of spirituality in their lives. Mm. And I don't mean that to be like foo-foo or anything. I think there's a calling to it, right? Mm-hmm. And I do think the last year has kind of been like, listen, I watched everything on Netflix. I watched The Tiger King. You know what? And now people have kind of branched out into other things. But you know, listen, there are things that were considered psychic or spiritual, or and all of these are just interchangeable words. But there are things that were considered that there's absolutely empirical scientific evidence that there is a, you know, that there's a real something really occurring. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, like prayer. You know, I'm not a religious person. I don't, you know, I was born and raised Catholic, but that's about the extent of it. But there's the study of noetics, which is essentially the study of faith and belief on the physicality of people's lives. And they've done research, you know, empirically accepted research, where you have someone who's sick in Helsinki and you have people in California praying for them, and that person doesn't know it, but at the assigned time, their EKG changes, right? Mm-hmm. So that's crazy, you know, when you think about that. But it's also science, you know, like it's just something that we haven't discovered yet. These, and I think that when it comes to witchcraft, and I think psychic phenomena is this, I think mediumship is that there is some kind of, maybe it's an electronic pulse, maybe it's some kind of, you know, maybe it's some kind of energy fiber that does interconnect all of us. And some people are better able to read those things than others. Like, you know, people whose hunches you trust, right? Like, I mean, I know there are people where I'm like, I just want you to read this and tell me what you think of it. And whatever they think, I think.
Yeah.
Because of whatever. And some people would call that good instinct. Mm-hmm. Some people would call that psychic phenomena. But I do agree with you. I think TikTok has had a huge influence on it.
I think also there's been this very interesting like resurgence of like 90s culture.
Yeah.
And in the 90s, as a young little girl that I was at the time, there was a very big popularity around witch movies.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The Craft, Practical Magic.
Because it's an inherently female
power thing. And now they're like nostalgic films and they're cult classics. And those are things that people in our demographic kind of are revisiting.
And they're being remade.
Right, but now Sabrina. We're older too. So now that there's this like witch trend, and then couple that with all of these movies that we used to love as kids. And now it's kind of like, well, are we witches? I don't know.
Well, remember, and witchcraft is about power. And not negative power. It's about the empowerment of the individual.
This, like, feminine, like,
strength. Right. The power of kind of, you know, grabbing hold of an inherent, you know, power that is connected to everything in the world. And when you look at like Charmed was a huge movie.
God, so
it's
good.
Not, but it's pop culture follows, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't lead.
Yes.
Right. So there was that kind of, there was a need for that or a desire for that. And then writers fill that.
Yes.
Right. But you know, like you had the Twilight franchise. I mean, look at Harry Potter. You know, Harry Potter kind of the whole witches and
there's always that magic
of, right. There's
happening
and there's a part of us that not only wants to believe in it, but there's a part of all of us that does.
It like makes you feel better a little.
It's and the idea.
Some of it's just fun, but some of it is like a little hopeful, especially if you don't believe in organized religion.
And the idea
that there's something else to look to.
Right. And the idea that you can walk into your garden and grow something that will make your cold feel better. There's something magical about that, especially with us, because we're so disconnected from that. We go to CVS or we go to Rite Aid to get something that makes our cold feel better. Well, of course, it's all based on, you know, herbal medicine. So the idea that you can go out into your garden in the moonlight and, you know, bask in it, but then also brew this tea that you grew and feel better about it, you're just going to feel more empowered. But yeah, I mean, and I'll tell you, I was up, I was up in Salem last weekend.
Oh, how was that?
And it
crowded,
was
I bet.
Packed.
Yep.
There were lines to shop. You know, and that's always how I imagined it here. You know, like growing the kind of the folklore of Asbury Park to kind of have that kind of thing. But I mean, you could wait online for 45 minutes to spend money. You know what I mean? And there are, I can't even tell you how many witch shops in
I have friends that lived in Salem briefly before they got married, like after they graduated college, and they don't even want to talk about it. They hate Halloween.
Not Halloween.
They never want to go back. They can't stand
it. You can't park.
They won't watch Hocus Pocus. Literally nothing. They never even want to speak
about it. Well, Hocus Pocus is responsible a lot for the,
100%.
The good feeling about witches, too.
100%.
So, a couple things, and I'm going to have to get too deep on it now. I think we'll close on this stuff. Number one, I'm interested in, you know, you were, because we talked a lot about you saying you've never done a proper hunt here at the Berkeley, which I think we need to change. So we're going to change that.
Awesome.
We got to get some cameras in here though to do that. We're going to do it. We're going to do it right.
So right. No, that's the way to do it. Yeah.
I'm going
to
be telling everybody, like, you know, stories after. They're not going to believe me. But you said that the Berkeley was a big part of the reason that you were inspired to come to Asbury. So what was the reason for that?
So there were three different ghost stories that that brought me to Asbury Park. One of them I now own. It's in, it's the building that I'm in. And I waited for that one. The other were the shipwrecks that are were along the boardwalk, which you know, the stories are out there, and I've written extensively about them, but so have other people. But the Berkeley at the time was known as the Berkeley Carteret. And it was the only continually operating hotel in Asbury Park in 2008. It was the only hotel in Asbury Park.
Oh, true.
And I had read and talked to some people who had had so many different experiences here. Most of them were musicians. And you have this idea that musicians are going to be like flighty and everything, but they're not. You know, they have to stay up late. So, you know, like they usually are pretty quiet during the day. And there was almost nobody in this, you know, in this place ever. Except for whoever was playing at the Pony or whoever was playing at the original Asbury Lanes. And the stories that I heard from them is what really compelled me to come here, in addition to the history of the place. Because the Berkeley's history is like a winding, it's like a crazy winding road. It's like if you gave a chihuahua, you know, crack and said, run down the road, it's all over the place. It has been everything from the premier hotel, resort hotel destination on the East Coast, which is what it was originally, right? And which is what it is now.
We'll get there.
But it was also a hospital. It was a military hospital. And you don't hear a lot about that because they don't talk about that, right?
I just found that out the other day. I feel like, I think Corey and I were looking up, like, hotel history.
It was almost impossible to find that.
Yeah,
okay?
It took us a while.
I had to, and when I was originally doing it, I actually had to write to the government to get the information.
I actually had some pretty crazy pictures.
And so imagine 12 or 13 years ago when none of this stuff was really available, but the stories that came out of it. And because it was also, I think it was an SRO at some point too, but because it was, it had a continuous history when a lot of Asbury Park didn't. And the continuous history, all of it, was very, very compelling because it was never people who knew each other telling the story. It was like some, it was like, I was there in 1978 and this happened. I was there in 1998 and this happened. I was there in 2008 and it happened. And, you know, the other thing about the Berkeley is when you walk through it, you know, it's a beautiful place.
It really is.
It is a, from an architectural standpoint, I mean, I don't know that you could, I don't know that there's a place that matches it.
It has so much character.
It's so utterly unique. Yeah. You know, its design is. But it was the preponderance of the stories. One story in particular, which I won't tell because I don't want to. What ends up happening then is people become so focused on that.
Yeah.
That they don't want to talk about anything else.
Yeah. Right.
And then, of course, you end up in that room, and you know.
I mean, that's the one that people do tend to come up and bring up to me a lot. But people will say, and I don't know. I'm like you, right? I don't really look at anything and have a set real when it's out in the ether, mm-hmm. kind of a thing.
Right.
I'm not like, oh, well, this must be, it must be the ghost thing is real, or it's this, or it's that. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of open-minded to a lot of different, potential aspects of it. But when we first got here, like I said, it's really easy to walk around now and forget what it was like when we first arrived.
There's nobody there, yeah.
Because it was just, so empty, so many places that were like, we didn't know anybody, we didn't have really... we had a number of things we thought we wanted to do, but we're reacting to COVID for the first time and all right. this other stuff.
And you didn't know, like 6 months, 8 months, when's it going
to
happen?
Yeah, and it was just so up in the air. We didn't know if we were going to be able to stay here. There was right. so much. We just knew that we loved the town and we thought the building was awesome.
Right.
And obviously still do, and that's only really intensified, right? And they've been really great. Like when we first got here, it was a lot of rolling the eyes. Well, you guys are only going to be there for a couple of months,
and then that'll be that. Yeah.
And then, obviously we fell in love with it, and things have been going the way it's going, and that's great, and we're going to be taking on more stuff, and that's very, very exciting. But when we first got here, there were definitely some things that were sticking out to mm-hmm. me. Like that was like, oh, yeah, like that's this, that's that. And I kind of shrug it off and keep it moving. And we got crazy, crazy, crazy busy. Crazy busy. And I am like a little, like when it comes to the ghost stuff, a little skittish, to be honest with you, since I was a kid. My parents were playing, or my mom was playing Ouija with my aunts one time. That jacked me up forever.
No Ouija for me.
So I'm walking through a hallway. And usually when people hit me up now, like, have you experienced anything? Well, one time. All right. Mm-hmm. So the answer is yes. And this is what happens. And this is where I now base my theory on I guess the paranormal, whatever mm-hmm. you want to call it. There was a period of time where I was feeling like I was almost being helped out.
Mm-hmm.
Like a certain song would play all the time when I would walk into a room. And we couldn't figure out how the speakers worked yet. So it's not even like we had a playlist. Like,
right.
But we would get things working, and then all of a sudden something would work. Something would come on. And like, but when you entered a room, this would happen or this would happen, whatever. So I'm walking down a back hallway in the kitchen after we closed. And we had to close everything at 10 back then because of COVID stuff.
Yeah.
And basically this is like a T-shaped hallway.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm coming on the right side, and then in the middle there's another hallway that goes down into the restaurant. On the far left is the kitchen. As I make the turn, now we're hiring people left and right back then. There's a guy that comes in. He's got beige pants and a green shirt and, like, muscularly built dude. And I'm, like, looking down. I have, I think, my head on my phone or something. And I'm like, oh, great. We hired somebody else. I'm like, this guy came to work dressed. He's, like, put together. That's great news,
that's
right?
Nice.
Everyone else is wearing shorts. He makes a right down the base of the hallway, okay? Now, this hallway is about 30 feet long.
Right.
He had about maybe 3 or 4 steps on me. He's not getting to the end of the hallway. Okay. And he's wearing like black shoes and it's like clicking. Mm-hmm. Right. I hear it. I see him. Like this is, I saw him. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He goes down the hallway. I look to my left. There's nobody there.
Stop.
No one there. Right. And I don't even stop. Okay. I keep walking and I scream out loud. I'm way too busy for this shit. And I make a right. Okay, haven't seen anything since.
Well,
all right. Now, then about a couple of weeks later, I read about the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
We do the haunting. Okay. Urbano comes down dressed, and this is, if you go to the haunting website right now, it's a video that's on there.
Oh my God. Urbano
comes down dressed like an old army.
Yep.
Oh my God.
That's what you were talking. I'm like, I know what this is.
It's exactly what the outfit was. And then I thought about it and I was like, I saw the entire person, but I'm realizing I didn't see their face.
Right.
And then I said to myself, it didn't have a face. Like, in a minute, because I was like, wait, I just didn't see it. It was dark. I'm right. No, man, there. But somehow it didn't register.
Right.
It didn't have a face. And I was like, holy shit. And like a week later, I have this one on tape. Urbano is sitting in the back room wearing that outfit randomly, you know, after the haunting. And somebody grabbed his ass.
No.
Yeah, like out of nowhere. He was like, he goes, what? And I have that on tape. You have to ask. Him. I think I've talked about that on the show before. But we think but basically, whatever the ghost is, if it's still here, he's into Urbano.
He's into Urbano. Well, yeah. That doesn't surprise me. He's a very fetching guy.
But
when you were talking about the style of dress, I'm like, I know where this is. I know where this is.
And I saw it when I looked it up. It was exactly what they were wearing.
When we were here, we were up in one of the ballrooms, and we did a quick EVP. You know, we had a lot of people there, so but we got a couple of recordings of voices. Two names came through, and one of them said stop, and I said, well, why do you want us to stop? And they said, it literally said, I have to get up early to go fishing.
Nice.
And so we got
a really long.
No, I mean, so they basically work here. I mean, that's
no, they're living here. Definitely living here. Not
honestly,
here. Yeah.
But when I say it all the time, like if anybody would have experienced a ton of things by now, it's me. For like as late as I'm here, like by myself.
Terrifying, honestly. I don't know how you do it.
I'm into it.
It gets dark outside, and I'm like,
nah. You know what? But there's just something about this place that like really makes you, I think, fall in love with it. It's a really, you know,
and you feel safe here.
Too.
You feel safe here.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't even say it's that. I think it's that I feel connected to it.
But that's what I mean. Like, this is your place.
You know, I feel like we, you know, I feel like we're attached to it.
Right.
You know, in its own way. So, but we're going to do a real one.
Yeah, absolutely.
We made it on tape.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me.
Love you so much. We're going to have you on a lot now.
Yay.
You're cursed.
I'm excited.
You know? But thank you guys for listening. I know, different kind of show, but this was fun. I know a lot of you guys are, but this is the teeing up to the big one. We're going to get, we're going to get Kathy your wish, and let's hope that I don't regret it and scare everybody from staying here. But I don't think we will. I think everyone's going to be into it. So excited again. Catch you guys later.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.